Chapter 13. It felt like waking from a nightmare, then realizing the nightmare had followed him from sleep. Sultan Vulbran's skull throbbed as though it had been filled with boiling vapor, a pressurized container with no way to vent. He groaned. His mouth felt sticky, like he'd been force-fed gallons of syrupy food paste. His eyes were gummed shut, his throat raw and constricted. What had happened to him? He felt hollow, as though the most potent purgatives had flushed his system and left him drained of energy and shivering. Bright light was spearing through his eyelids, straight into his brain, which felt like a dreadnought was crushing it in its motorized fist. Every nerve felt as though it were pushing out through his skin, such that every contact was painful.
"He's waking up," said a voice, gravelly and coarse.
"I wasn't sure he would," said another.
"Didn't hit him that hard," growled yet another.
He tried to make sense of what he was hearing, the cold, echoing hum of machinery and the bite of counterseptic and formaldehyde suggested an apothecarian, but the rough voices and scrape of armour plates and gun oil suggested a legionary's arming chamber.
"Where am I?"
he said, his voice a strangled, dry wheeze.
"Aboard the Iron Blood," said the first voice, "in the apothecarian." At least he'd got that right.
"Why am I here? What happened?"
He opened his eyes, squinting against the glare of stark lumen strips and reflected light from brushed steel cabinets and glass tubes of suspended flesh and replacement organs.
"We were hoping you could tell us."
The owner of the voice leaned over him and he recognized Solaka. The apothecary was a warrior of Warsmith's Toramino's Grand Battalion and the current Honourable of the Dodecathian, an honorific he actually deserved, if rumour were to be believed. Vulbran sat up, his body as weak as the day he had woken after the implantation of the black carapace. His limbs shivered, and the muscles felt abused and stretched beyond their ability to endure. Hands reached out to steady him. Warsmith Forex stood to one side of the reinforced gurney upon which he sat, one arm holding tightly to his bicep. The grip was light but painful, and Vulbran pulled away. By the wide doors of the apothecarian stood a bland-faced legionary with long hair worn in an elaborate braid over the right side of his skull. His face was familiar, but Vulbran couldn't place it until he reached up to rub the tender skin at his jawline.
"You struck me," he said, remembering the pile driver blow that had put him down.
"You're welcome," said Cadaras Grendel.
"What?"
snapped Vulbran, wincing as the hammering in his skull intensified.
"I should kill you for that."
"I think in this case we can forego a disciplinary," said Forex.
"He struck a superior officer," protested Vulbran.
"You really don't remember what happened, do you?" grinned the insufferable Grendel, his louche grin spreading wider. "That stuff Eidolon gave you must have been hellish strong."
"Eidolon?"
said Vulbran, as a memory surfaced like a bloated body in water.
"I remember smoking something. There was drink, too, I think. Something made from tears," he said.
"It is likely that Legionary Grendel saved your life," said Solaka, extruding a hyposyringe from his gauntlet Narthesium.
Vulbran felt the prick of the needle in his shoulder and a warmth spread from the insertion point. Almost immediately his thoughts cleared and the pain in his skull began to recede as his body's healing mechanisms were chemically kicked into high gear. His skin felt hot and beads of oily toxin sweated from his pores.
"I don't understand," he said.
"I'm not sure any of us do,"
said Forex, circling the gurney and studying him as though unsure whether to welcome him back to the Legion or clap him in irons.
"I don't know what they were doing to you, Stonerot, but I think Grendel stopped you from becoming like them."
Vulbran could barely remember anything of the meeting in Laphanice, but just the thought of being part of it revolted him. His gorge rose and he fought down a wave of sickness, gripping the edge of the gurney to keep his stomach contents where they belonged. "Something vile has taken root in the Emperor's children," said Forex. "We all knew it the minute we saw Fulgrim's Carnivalia on Hydrocordatus, but it's worse than any of us feared."
"What do you mean?" asked Solaka. "He means that the rumours we've been hearing are more than just rumours," said Perturabo,
ducking his head as he entered the Apothecarian, followed by three of the Iron Circle. The chamber had felt cramped before, but with the Primarch and his shield-bearing bodyguards it felt positively claustrophobic.
"Rumours, my lord," said Vulbron. "What rumours?"
"The ones that circulated after Istvan V," said Perturabo. "Wild stories of orgiastic worship of old gods and demons, of sorcery and sacrifice."
"But surely rumour is all they were," said Forex, offended by the notion. "We're not actually thinking there are ancient powers in the warp. Whatever's going on with the Emperor's children, it's madness, some new obsession with perfection on the Phoenicians' part, but that's all it is."
Perturabo hesitated.
"I tried to deny it, to rationalize it as a sickness of the mind, but having seen what has become of the Third Legion and hearing what Cadaras Grendel had to say about events on the Pride of the Emperor, it's clear Fulgrim believes he serves these demon gods."
"Gods?" said Vulbron, not wanting to accept this, but feeling a dreadful sense of the truth of it by saying the words aloud. "Sorcery and demonic powers?"
"I agree. It sounds like insanity, but if Fulgrim and his legion have embraced this belief, then we have to take it seriously."
"I remember monsters," he said. "Eidolon called them Terrata. He said they were the bastard by-blows of Apothecary Fabius."
"Fabius is creating new life forms," said Solaka. "What were they?"
"Diabolical things. Hybrid melds of surgical mutilation and genetic nightmare."
Vulbron swallowed, the taste bilious and repellent as the memory of deformed slaves and their wanton disfigurements arose in his mind. The horror of the Third Legion's revels lodged like a knife in the guts, and he fell back on the first tenets of the Iron Warriors.
"From iron cometh strength, from strength cometh will," he said, as a wave of nausea threatened to overcome him. "From will cometh faith, from faith cometh honour, from honour cometh iron."
"May it forever be so," said Solaka,
completing the catechism and leaning in close to Vulbron.
"But tell me more of these new life forms. They sound fascinating." "Forget them, Solaka," said Perturabo,
lifting Vulbron's head and turning it from side to side.
"Nothing good can come of such tampering. But Fabius's alchemy is potent, if his drugs can fell an iron warrior."
His face hardened to granite.
"I don't pretend to understand what's happening to my brother's legion, but we'll send no more of our warriors to their depraved meetings. Whatever corruption has taken Fulgrim's warriors will not take mine."
"So, what do we do now?" asked Forex.
"I will have words with my brother," said Perturabo.
Barb and Falk paced the length of the Iron Bloods bridge, clad in his Mark IV plate, his hands laced behind his back. He paused to watch the maddening swirl of nameless colours and the play of tempestuous thunderheads that boomed and clashed beyond the viewscreen. The Eye of Terror, as it now appeared on the astrogation charts, was a raging holocaust of immaterial energies, but the course plots being fed from the Andronicus and its alien navigator were following real space veins that threaded its turbulent depths with aplomb. Though it went against his every instinct to trust an Eldar guide, Falk was forced to admit that the paths above were as calm as any inter-system flight path he had plied, and they had not lost one of the hundreds of ships in their fleet. As best they could, the data engines of the Iron Blood were recording their course, though Falk suspected that this pathway would only remain viable for as long as their mission took to complete. It irked Falk to be alone on the bridge, but while Kroger established his presence with his Grand Battalion, and Forex inveigled himself with the Primarch, at least one of the Trident needed to be here. The Iron Blood's captain,
A mechanized hybrid named Bardet Vought kept them on course, his body largely subsumed into the devotional altar from which the vessel was steered. Falk ignored the steady stream of correctional data from the captain and resumed his pacing, feeling his gaze again drawn to the boiling miasma of swirling light and undying energies that seethed beyond the fragile protection of the ship's protective fields. Here and there patterns formed and dissolved, patterns that looked like faces, eyes, and a thousand other elements of human features. All random and all illusory, for the warp was a realm of fantasy, a little understood realm of shifting and treacherous space, where nothing was as it seemed, and little could be taken at face value. Standard practice while traversing warp currents was to keep the oculus sealed off from the immaterial currents raging outside, but given the safety of their route, Falk had kept the bridge shutters open. The interior of a starship was such a drab, functional place, and the shimmering oil-slick colours bathing the bridge space in wondrous spirals of light and hues to which he could give no name were a pleasing diversion. Falk halted in the centre of the bridge, letting Servitor Kant, binaric mumblings and the clatter of data engine coils wash over him as he peered into the depths of the storm. As if reacting to his scrutiny, the currents before the ship slithered and spun into new and ever more elaborate forms. Lines and curves intersected, a haphazard collection of randomly assembled angles. Meaningless in themselves, but as Falk stared harder, they began to cohere into something tangible. Beyond the apparent chaos of the whirls of light and dark, Falk saw the fleeting impression of a grinning face. A skull, like that worn on both the shoulder guards of his warplate. He blinked, and the image was gone. His mouth was suddenly dry, but he wasn't even sure what he'd seen, if he'd seen anything at all. He stared at the churning warp pocket where he thought he'd seen the skull, but the lines and curves and angles refused to come together. He looked away from the view screen, staring at the beaten iron wall of the bridge. Patterns of fabrication striations and micro-cracks in the metal seemed to writhe beneath his gaze, the fractal crazing of the metal leaping into clarity and displaying the same skull he had seen in the depths of the warp. Falk gritted his teeth and looked away. In the intersecting lines of latticed girders, he saw it again. In the scores creased into the leather of his gauntlets, its hollow eye sockets regarded him strangely, like a stranger refusing to break eye contact. Once seen, the skull could not be unseen, and Falk felt a mounting panic as the scuff marks on the iron deck plates and the chevroning of gold and black eased into the shape of the leering skull. He fought to calm his breathing, knowing that the warp could play tricks on the brain, that its ill-understood physics were capable of twisting the mind's perceptions of reality. "Seal the bridge," he said. "Shutters down." The grinding shutters concertinaed over the viewing bay, but as they drew closed, Falk's eyes narrowed and he held up his hand as he saw a brilliant flare of energized light bloom from ahead of the iron blood, like a newborn star. "Hold! Reopen shutters!" The shutters pulled back with a groan of protest, and Falk marched down to the surveyor station as a chime of detection sounded. He scanned the readings on the forward auspex and felt a mounting exhilaration seize him. He pressed a finger to his gorget. "Lord Perturabo," he said, "we are not alone here." "What in the name of the Primarch just happened?" demanded Cadmus Tyro, striding towards the station normally occupied by Freighter Thematica, but which was now manned by Sabic Wayland. Wayland wished he had an answer. Red light after red light appeared on the steel-panelled display before him, each one a vital ship system going offline. "I'm not sure, Captain," said Wayland. "The engine cores registered a critical reactor spike and automatically triggered the venting protocols.
They've shut down almost every onboard system until the energy levels have bled off enough to restore them safely.
Where did that reactor spike come from?
Wayland scrolled through the last 15 minutes of engine data, seeing output readings that were far in excess of what the Sisyphean's current speed would suggest. Each engine core was operating well below its capability during the delicate manoeuvres through the paths below, but they were still generating colossal amounts of energy. With a sinking feeling, Wayland suspected he knew full well where that power had been diverted to.
"Thematica, you damn fool," he said.
"What?" demanded Tyro, and his eagle took wing at his fury.
"What's that bloody maniac gone and done now?"
"I think the freighter has made a second attempt to get his thermic displacement beamer operational. He said he needed bigger generators, and I believe he's been bleeding engine power to his laboratorium."
"Thematica!" yelled Tyro over the ship's vox. "What have you done to my ship? Get up here now so I can beat you to death."
No answer was forthcoming, and Tyro again rounded on Wayland as emergency lights fired up with a thrum of engaging circuits, bathing the bridge in a red glow. Wayland bent to his terminal, culling every last shred of diagnostic data he could still bring up. He saw the subtlety with which Thematica had concealed his siphoning of reactor energy, how he had generated an exponentially vast build-up of power, and the catastrophic diversion of feedback at his experiment's conclusion.
"What's he done to us?"
demanded Vermanus Cybus, already trying to restore the ship's weapon systems.
"I can't get any power to the gun batteries."
"The venting protocols have taken everything out," said Wayland, looking at zeroed output levels across the board. "We're dead in the void."
"Damn him! I'll have his head for this," said Tyro.
"There's more," said Wayland, "and you're not going to like it."
"What?"
"Venting that much electromagnetic energy into space is like lighting a clan's beacon fire," said Wayland. "Any ship within 100 light-years will probably have seen it."
"The traitors? They'll know we're here?"
"Almost certainly." Tyro spun away from him and shouted over to the navigational pod where Verucci Vora sat. The Eldar scholar rose from the reclined couch and gracefully made his way towards the incensed captain of the Sisyphean.
"The paths above and the paths below, how distant are they?"
Vora spread his hands and then spiralled them around one another.
"The question is not easy to answer," he said. "In a tempest such as this, distance is a relative term. One might as well ask how distant is a dream from wakefulness."
"I don't need bloody poetry," snapped Tyro. "Give me a straight answer, or I'll put a bolt through your skull right now. Will they be close enough to have seen our engine flare?"
"If they have eyes in the void, then they will have seen it, yes," said Verucci Vora.
Tyro ran over to the surveyor station, one of the few systems spared the blackout of the reactor spike. The display was cascading gibberish, a flickering, static-laced nightmare of meaningless returns and confused imagery the surveyors could not interpret. In the midst of a warp storm, conventional Auspex readings were all but useless, and only the unique mutation of a navigator could hope to steer a ship through its immaterial currents. Right now, Tyro needed something, anything to tell him where the enemy were. Waves of white noise and distortion washed through the Auspex, but just for an instant the slate cleared and Tyro had a fleeting glimpse of the local spatial environment. The threat board lit up as it took a snapshot of the returns it was getting from its passive sensors. Tyro's blood chilled, as if he were standing next to the stasis casket of Ulrak Branthon. Over 300 capital-class contacts, dead astern on a low parallel vector. Two forward picket ships, strike cruisers at least, closing on surging intercept vectors. And the Sisyphean drifting without power, helpless as an infant shardworm in a snare.
"Battle stations!" shouted Cadmus Tyro. "Enemy ships inbound!"
Perturabo watched the replay of what the prow Auspex had recorded at the farthest extent of its range, a distorted inload of aberrant data and meaningless warp interference. Then, at precisely the same moment, each time, the sudden brightness of an electromagnetic pulse. Frequencies, radiance, and nuclear spectra cascaded from the brightness, and Perturabo let the data lodge in the deep seams of his cognitive strata.
"It's an enemy ship," said Forex, his surprise evident.
"Do we know whose?" asked Kroger.
"It's an Iron Hands vessel," said Perturabo,
tracing a finger down the streams of data as the recording looped once more.
10th Legion," said Forex. "The assassins on Hydra Cordatus were Iron Hands."
"One of them was," corrected Perturabo. "But this is the ship they came from. I know it."
The Primarch paused, the expanding halo of energy flaring from the Iron Hands ship, wondering how the Medusan warriors could have been so careless as to allow such a visible sign of their presence.
"Not like the 10th to make a mistake like that," noted Kroger.
"My thoughts exactly," said Perturabo. "Under normal operational circumstances, I might say it was too convenient for them to reveal themselves so blatantly. But I don't think this is a trap. I think we've just been handed a golden opportunity."
"I have a fix on their last position," said Falk, standing beside Vought's command altar. "We're at the forefront of the fleet, and we'll be within range in a few minutes."
Perturabo nodded, then bent to the console with the frozen image of the expanding electromagnetic pulse. His eyes narrowed as he parsed the data and tapped the screen thoughtfully. He looked up into the maddening squalls and tempests raging outside, seeing a cold logic and order in the seething nuclear heart of the storm. Idiot sentience given rudimentary form by the very flecks of insignificance that plied its immaterial currents. Voyaging within the Eye of Terror had only increased his feeling of being studied, as though the eternal chaos of the storm had folded in on itself to regard the interlopers within its forbidden heart. None of his gene sons could know the warp as he did. They had not heard its siren song since their earliest days. To them, the Eye of Terror was an impenetrable hellstorm, a strange and mysterious phenomenon, a spatial hazard to be avoided. To Perturabo, it was a remnant of the galaxy's ancient symphony, the background noise to existence itself, and the fading echoes of creation music from the dawn of time.
"My lord," said Forex, "is something wrong?"
"Something's awry," said Perturabo,
a fresh suspicion forming in his mind, like a coy secret that would only reveal itself properly coaxed.
"What am I seeing here? There's something, something that shouldn't be."
He looked past the obvious signs of a ship in distress and let his burgeoning suspicion grow and develop without conscious direction. The solution would come, this thought that tugged at his subconscious, but only when it was ready. An ascending tritone from behind announced an incoming communication from the Emperor's Children Fleet. Perturabo knew who it would be before Barb and Falk confirmed it.
"Vox hail from the Pride of the Emperor. Lord Fulgrim wishes to speak to you, my lord."
Perturabo nodded, and a pellucid green form appeared above the hard light projector embedded in the deck before the viewscreen. The Phoenician was clad in his voluminous robes, with fire-wreathed cherubim bearing his trailing cloak and winged battle helm.
"You have seen it?" breathed Fulgrim, his voice hoarse with excitement.
"We have, brother," replied Perturabo. "We will be in firing range in moments."
"Firing range? Surely you can't mean to simply destroy this ship?"
"Of course. What else would I do?"
"The Andronicus is preparing boarding craft to capture it," said Fulgrim, as if it were the most obvious thing in the world. "You must have seen that this is one of the Gorgon's ships."
10th Legion, yes, what of it?"
"I would not pass up this chance to humble poor dead Ferris's men again," said Fulgrim.
"No," said Perturabo. "As soon as we have a firing solution, the Iron Blood will blow that ship out of the void."
Fulgrim's image managed to look suitably disappointed.
"Aren't you the least bit curious as to how they came to be ahead of us? Who they are, and why they are here?"
"No."
"Really? Karuchi Vora says they may have a guide like him aboard."
"All the more reason to destroy it immediately."
"Permit me this one indulgence," pouted Fulgrim's shimmering form. "If it were an Imperial Fists vessel, I doubt you would be so quick to arm the bombardment cannons. You would be aboard that lumbering storm bird of yours and already looking for a breaching point."
Perturabo cut the link between the Iron Blood and the pride of the Emperor. He turned to Barb and Falk and said,
"As soon as you have a firing solution, destroy the enemy ships."
"My lord," said Falk.
"Ships?"
Perturabo nodded, now understanding the substance of his suspicion, returning his gaze to the looping-picked recording of the electromagnetic pulse. Yes, a shadow in the flare of light, a hint of darkness where no darkness ought to be. A reflection in the mirror of the maelstrom, where nothing should exist to be reflected.
"One of them's running," said Perturabo, "but there are two ships out there."
The attack order went out, and the Emperor's children responded with perfect speed. The embarkation deck of the Andronicus was chaotic with warbands fighting to get to the stormbirds and boarding torpedoes. The caged raptors of attack craft were loaded on their guide rails, freshly daubed in their new colours, shocking pinks, electric blues and neon yellows. Great banners of skin and silk billowed from the iron rafters in roasting thermals as engines thundered to life. Lucius sprinted through the throng, heading for the nearest stormbird. A helpless enemy ship, the best kind of enemy ship, drifted in the void within reach of the picket, and its crew were just waiting to be plucked. His swords practically danced in their scabbards, and though he told himself that their eagerness was just his imagination, he could no longer quite convince himself. His armour glistened with flesh grease, and the blood from his fresh facial scars was still sticky on the defaced eagle at the centre of his breastplate. Lucius vaulted onto the assault ramp of the Stormbird, and certain he had secured his place in the initial wave of boarding craft, turned to see who else would be joining him. The Legion's warriors scrambled and fought to be the first to get to grips with the enemy. Their devotions had been turned inward since Prismatica, and the chance to bathe in the screams of the enemy was too delicious to pass up. Marius Verosian blared a path to a waiting Stormbird, his cacophony roaring behind him with their madly skirling sonic cannons screaming and wailing like a chorus of the damned. Bastinea Branks had fought his way to a craft, together with his consort Lonomia Ruin. Abranks saw him and raised a sword. A challenge or a salute, Lucius didn't care. Lucius's gaze was drawn to a boarding torpedo at the far end of the deck, isolated from the others, like a plague victim. No one fought to reach this craft, for the solitary figure of apothecary Fabius stood before it, calmly directing the motion of a heavy lifter rig as it manoeuvred a gigantic container from the depths of the ship. Labelled with all manner of biohazard symbols, even the sensation-seeking Emperor's children knew to keep away from the dreadful things birthed in Fabius's bedlam chambers. Flesh-hooded servitors guided the biological container forwards, like the slaves of some ancient monument-builder. They secured it within the torpedo's interior, and Fabius climbed in after it, sealing the blast shutters behind him. "What are you up to, you old necromancer?" wondered Lucius, his interest piqued. He heard the percussive booms of hatches sealing behind fully laden boarding torpedoes and grinned as he ducked back into the red-lit interior of the crew compartment. Dozens of Emperor's children were lashing themselves to the gravity harnesses, cutting their palms with the teeth of their chain blades, rocking back and forth in pent-up excitement or howling like maddened wolves in the fold. The assault ramp swung up, and Lucius felt the Stormbird strain against the clamps of its launch rail. Quickly he found an empty seat and strapped himself in as the growling, vibrating attack craft was finally unleashed. Powerful engines spat the Stormbird into the calm void between the Andronicus and its victim. Powerful G-forces pinned Lucius to his seat, and he licked blood from his lips. His swords were drawn, though he had no memory of unsheathing them. He spat onto the blades, laughing as pleasure sang through his body. Perturabo cursed as he saw the Andronicus swing around with a surge of corrective burn to put itself between the iron blood and the drifting vessel of the 10th Legion.
"Damn you, brother!" hissed Perturabo.
"I have a firing solution," said Barbenfalk. Perturabo shook his head.
"You'd hit the Andronicus," he said.
"Fulgrim ordered his ship to block our shot," growled Forex.
"Almost certainly," agreed Perturabo.
"He knew we were going to open fire," said Kroger.
"I say we shoot anyway. It's their own damn fault if their ship gets hit."
Perturabo chewed the proposition over, the greater part of him wanting to give the order and damn the consequences. Fulgrim had descended into terrifying depths of egomania, and who knew what his newfound beliefs in demons and gods might compel him to do if he felt he was being attacked. Such narcissists could twist any accidental or imagined slight into the grossest insult, and lighting the spark of a void war between two whole legions in the eye of terror probably wasn't wise.
"No," said Perturabo, "such an act will break our fragile alliance for certain, and I've still to learn what my brother is really after."
"He defied you," snarled Forex. "He has earned retribution."
"Enough," said Perturabo, drawing Forgebreaker from its shoulder harness. "If Fulgrim wants to capture this vessel, then we will not let him have all the glory."
Kroger was the first to grasp the implication of his words.
"I will ready the Stormbirds," he said, heading for the armoured doors to the bridge. "We'll be ready to launch within 10 minutes.
"No," said Perturabo, "this will be over by then."
"What about that second ship?" said Forex.
"It's already gone," said Perturabo. "Whoever it was, they don't want any part of this fight yet. If we want to take the iron to the stone, we have to do it now."
"My lord," said Forex, a note of warning in his voice as he realized what Perturabo intended,
"so close to the edges of warp interference, without fixed lock points, the risks are too great.
Fulgrim may have started this, but we'll damn well finish it," said Perturabo, turning to Barbenfalk. "Bring us in above the enemy ship and power up the teleport chambers."